I do not believe that they are to bring the prayers to God, because this takes away the verse that there's one intermediary between God and man. Okay? Now, you had at one time that Moshe was set up to do exactly that, but he died. If you remember in Shemot chapter 20, after they heard the voice of God, they said, you go and find out what God said and come, and you come back and tell us, and we'll be glad and do it. Okay? And in Deuteronomy 18:15, God said, they spoke good when they asked for that. I'm sending them the prophet. Whatever he says, you're to do, and so forth. Okay? But the idea or the concept of these winged mythological creatures was not only unique to Israel, but to the entire Middle East. Stop and think about, what do you have outside the pyramids? The Sphinx. That's correct. You've seen, all of you I'm sure have seen, that going into the Assyrian and the Babylonian palaces, the great winged bulls, and so forth. Now, in those cultures, possibly they served as intermediaries. They served as ones that would carry the messages. But I would tend to think of them as very powerful creatures. That the God of these creatures is more powerful than them. How could one achieve getting past them, much less coming before the all-powerful God? Okay, now, in the Agadah, the Talmud enumerates the Kiruv among the five things which were in the first temple, but not in the second. Now, you need to write this down, because there's going to be a contradiction of that in a few moments. I'm going to give you the sources for this. Sometime you might be working on something. You need the sources. Yoma 21a. However, in Yoma 21a, it also says, it gives another opinion, the Second Temple did possess pictorial reproductions of the Cherubim. Excuse me, that's not in 21a, that's in 54a. The second one. It's Talmud. Out of Yoma. Babylonian Talmud. Because of this, the only references to the Cherubim in the Talmud are Agadic ones, referring to the Cherubim in the first temple. The word is interpreted as meaning like a child. This is what Glenn had referred to earlier. Rabia, R-A-B-I-A in Aramaic, a child. Sukkah 5b. Now Josephus, let me read this to you. Nevertheless, in the time of Josephus, this description appears to have been unknown, since he says, no one can tell what they were like. That's from Antiquities 8:3:3. Okay, now you remember I told you about the faces being inward. The passage from 2 Chronicles 3:13, which, let me read this to you. We made a note of this particular passage when we were going through. 2 Chronicles 3:13. The wings of these cherubim spread 20 cubits overall. They stood on their feet and they faced inward. Okay? It's not they faced inward. Their faces were inward. Their face was turned. The body, not necessarily, but the face was turned inward. Okay, now, what does that mean? Here we go. It is regarded as meaning that the cherubim faced away from one another. However, in Exodus 25:20, which says, And the cherubim shall stretch out their wings above, covering the mercy seat or the Kaporet with their wings, and they shall face one another. The faces of the cherubim shall be toward the mercy seat. Okay, so you need to write these down. By the way, we finish these little articles here. A lot of the confusion that you have will start to clearing up. Okay? Exodus 25:20 states, with their faces to one another. Now, let me come to the board. Goodness, this is a miracle. First time to go to the board. Okay, here we have the Aron Kodesh. And here we have the Kervim on top. Apparently, the Exodus 25:20 is referring to the Kaporet, and we have that the Kervim are facing each other. Okay? Here we have the two Kervim that are added by Shlomo. So we have those. Actually, there would be four inside the Devir. The two on top of the Kaporet plus the two that are covered, that are olive wood covered with gold. 10 cubits high by 10 cubits, their wings stretched out, one wing touching another wing. Now these two apparently are not facing each other. Or they are not looking one to the other. Okay, Exodus 25 passage on the two on top of the Kaporet. The 2 Chronicles 3 passage for the two that are not looking directly at each other. But you see, it's not a contradiction. It is no contradiction since you have two sets.
Were the two sets in the temple at the same time?
Yes, the two were in the temple at the same time.
In the Holy of Holies.
In the Holy of Holies.
Did those sets touch?
No. The just the larger ones.
The two that were overlaid with gold, were acacia wood overlaid with gold. What about the other two?
These are olive wood overlaid with gold.
Olive wood. Okay.
These are made from one beaten piece of gold. The lid to the Kaporet, possibly the lid itself, the bottom of the lid is acacia wood. The ark is acacia wood. But I'm not sure about the lid, but the kervim on top of it are not. They were solid gold. Or hollow on the inside, possibly.
The devar was the golden ones, the solid gold. The place between was the devar, or was that the olive overlaid with gold?
Okay. The whole room, Holy of Holies, is called the devir in here. But I believe that specifically what we're talking about is an area right in here as being the throne of God, being the devar of God, and so forth. Yes, Tom?
I thought we said one time that they looked at one another's feet and made a cross.
That is possibly where... Well, see, I'm doing it wrong. Like this.
Not the two.
How do I describe that? Can you? I tell you what. Somebody make a drawing of this for Daryl so that he can put next month to send out with Havara tapes or with a. We'll do a set of this.
The olive ones overlaid with gold. Were they looking? Which direction were they looking in?
Okay, I gotta wait till we get specifically on. On that. Okay, let me continue on. There's a very interesting Agadah here. That it said that it is explained that since the Kervim represented the relationship of love between God and His people, when Israel failed to fulfill the divine will, the Kervim were turned one from another. When Israel fulfilled the will of God, however, not only did they face one another, but they were intertwined in the embrace of love. When the Israelites came up on the pilgrim festivals, the curtain would be removed from them and the cherubim shown to them, their bodies interlocked with one another, and they would say to them, "Look, your love before God is love between a man and a woman." That's out of the Talmud. When the heathens entered the temple, they were shocked at this sight, and carrying the intertwined cherubim out, they scornfully exhibited them, disgusted that the Israelites, whose blessing is a blessing and whose curse a curse, should occupy themselves with such matters. That is one of the explanations that were from the Talmud. Okay, God's throne of glory is situated opposite the cherubim, and the Shekinah was above it. The four-faced cherubim of Ezekiel okay, I'm going to give you a quote from a work called the Pesikta de Rabbi, Eliezer 4. Explains, when he spoke facing the east, the voice came from between the two kerubs with human faces. And when he spoke facing the south, the voice emerged from between the two kerubs having the face of a lion. Okay, you don't need to make notes on those. Those are just interesting side points that part of the lore of the cherubim. Okay, I want to take the article now from the Jewish Encyclopedia.
Why would God use something like a statue of gold when he had the real thing to have back in the Holy of Holies?
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, at least that, as Dave said, a picture of the heavenlies. Let me see if I can locate my sheet here. Okay. This is the article from the Jewish Encyclopedia, the C volume, and is page 13 through 16. I'm going to pass around an illustration, and this illustration has some various wing characters from the Middle East. I'd like for you in particular to note the ark. Now, what I'd like to do on this is simply add to whatever notes you have. Definitely not going to read the whole article. Just kind of hit certain points. Okay, a concise description of Yehezkel's Merkavah. Okay, you might want to copy this down. Okay, the prophet Ezekiel describes the cherubim as a tetrad of living creatures, each having four faces, of a lion, an ox, an eagle, and a man. The stature and hands of a man, the feet of a calf, and four wings. Two of the wings extended upward, meeting above, and sustaining the throne of God, while the other two stretched downward and covered the creatures themselves. They never turned, but went straight forward as the wheels of the cherubic chariot. And they were full of eyes like burning fires of coal. Okay. The two cherubim built by Solomon, are the olive wood covered with gold, the distance between the points of the outstretched wings was 10 cubits. The right wing of the one touching the point of the left wing of the other, while the outer wings extended to the walls. Okay, we have in 2 Chronicles 3:14 that they were woven in the veil of Solomon's temple, as well as in Exodus 26, verses 1 and 31, and Exodus 36, verse 8 and 35.
Each wing
is 10 cubits.
So if the wings came together and touched, that's 20 cubits, which is the width.
That's right.
So if the wings weren't straight out from each other, it sounds like the actual stature of the body.
You mean one was down?
Well, I'm thinking one was, they were standing in the corner and they were making a box with the actual hair beam in the corner. One
wing this, like this. Make it a 90 degree.
Yeah, a 90 degree angle.
It's very interesting.
Then you're kind of surrounding the Ram Kadesh.
It's very interesting. It's, Glenn, turn that picture towards me. Very similar to what you see on the ark there, that middle picture. Okay. We have, in the early days of Israel's history, the Kerubim became the divine chariot and bearer the throne of the Lord in its progress through the worlds. We have, here's something interesting. The Kerubim placed by God, this is in rabbinical and apocryphal literature, the Kerubim placed by God at the entrance of paradise, Genesis 3:24, were angels created on the third day. And therefore they had no definite shape, appearing either as men or women, or as spirits or angelic beings. Now that's rabbinic literature. But in rabbinic literature, it has angels being created on the third day of creation. Okay, an interesting side point. According to another authority, the Kerubim were the first objects created in the universe. While in the Slavonic Book of Enoch, they are said to dwell in both the sixth and seventh heavens. The passage referring to the sixth heaven is as follows. In the midst of them, the archangels are seven phoenixes and seven Kerubim. And seven six-winged creatures are seraphim, being as one voice and singing with one voice. It is not possible to describe their singing, and they rejoice before the Lord at His footstool. Enoch then, chapter 20, verse 1, describes how he saw in the seventh heaven Kerubim and Seraphim and the watchfulness of many eyes equaling the Ophanim. The Ethiopian Book of Enoch also mentions three classes of angels as those that never sleep but always watch the throne of God. In another passage of this book, Gabriel is designated as the archangel who is set over the serpents. In other words, the garden, which is Gan Eden, paradise, and over the Kerubim. Okay, let's see. Philo thinks they represented the two supreme attributes of God. Please write this down. Philo thinks that they represented the two supreme attributes of God, goodness and authority. He says, however, that some authorities took the Kerubim to represent the two hemispheres, which is also an interesting thought. The two attributes of God, His goodness and authority. Now, what's that?
Two hemispheres of the world?
I gather. That's correct. They understood that the world was round. All right. Here's here's a very strange statement. Listen to this. The rabbinical sources evince an archaeological rather than a theological interest in the caravine. That is really strange. Onkelos, the proselyte, now that's beginning in the 2nd century BCE, Common Era, the Targum Onkelos, which was the Targum, main Targum that was used on the Torah, says that the Kerubim had their heads bent backward, like a pupil who is going away from his master. This is intended to explain the somewhat ambiguous verse referring to the Kerubim in the tabernacle, one we just saw. Okay, the one that we just talked about their faces. Yes, I lost the sheet on that. Okay, meaning that the faces of the cherubim were bent downward toward the cover, the copperet of the ark, which I agree with. But still with their eyes turned toward each other. Head down, eyes this way, looking out. Onkelos' view is also given the Targum Onkelos on the passage, while the Targum Yerushalmi thinks that the faces of both the opposite cherubim were turned downward toward the cover.
Joe, Philo thinks what represents the goodness and authority?
It doesn't say. It says, Philo thinks they represented the two supreme attributes of God, goodness and authority.
The cherubim, is that what
we're saying? Yes, Okay, from the Kabbalah. This conception of the Kerubim as representing the union of Israel with God. Okay, now you remember the Midrash that I read to you before. Whether you like that representation or not, that was at least one of the understandings the people had of the Kerubim. Okay? So this conception of the Kerubim as representing the union of Israel with God has been further developed by the Kabbalah. The Kerubim being taken to represent the mysterious union of the earthly with the heavenly. Please write that down. In direct relationship to the Ophanim as they're described on the earth and in the heavens. In Ezekiel chapter 1.
Didn't have anything to do with Genesis 6?
It very well could. It could have something to do with just any place for us. As far as I could go.
I'm referring to the sons of God and daughters again.
Maybe so. Okay, this conception of the Kerubim as representing the union of Israel with God has been further developed by the Kabbalah, the Kerubim being taken to represent the mysterious union of the earthly with the heavenly. The symbolical interpretation of the Alexandrians. You remember the Alexandrians? Stephen was stoned at the synagogue of the Alexandrians. Remember? The symbolical interpretation of the Alexandrians mentioned above is also found in rabbinical sources. Midrash Tadshei, like Philo, takes the Kerubim to symbolize the two names of God, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh and Elohim, by which rabbinical theology designates the two attributes, Rachamim, goodness, and Dain, justice. Another Midrash, Numbers Rabbah 4, compares the Kerubim with heaven and earth, as do the Alexandrians mentioned by Philo. Maimonides says that the figures of the Kerubim were placed in the sanctuary only to preserve among the people the belief in angels, there being two in order that the people might not be led to believe that they were the image of God. Okay, this is important. There were no Kerubim in the temple of Herod. But, according to some authorities, now this is what we gave you before from Yoma 54a. I'm reading you this one because it gives a little bit more information. But according to some authorities, its walls were painted with figures of cherubim, which I believe. I believe that they would definitely have had cherubim on Herod's temple. Okay.
Inside the temple or on the outside?
Okay, my guess is that it is okay. You have inside the walls of the HaKodesh, the holy place, there are panels, gold panels. They're 1 cubit by 1 cubit square, and these are taken down and put on the southern stairs of the temple for all to see during the festivals. They roll the veils up so that people can see into the HaKodesh room and see the veils separating the HaKodesh from the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Now, my question is, if those were solid, just plain gold, who would be impressed? They took these out to display them. Who would be impressed with that? I mean, gold in the temple was like snow in Chicago in January. Who would be impressed with, I think they were embossed with cherubim, date palms, and the various things that were there in Solomon's temple. That's just my opinion. And it's based on nothing more than they took them out to display them. Therefore, they must have had a beauty of their own. And based upon what was in the Mishkan, and in Solomon's temple, I believe that they would have had to have followed suit and put those same images into the second temple, even though there is no Talmudic reference saying such.
I lost my thought because I was listening to what you were saying.
Okay.
On the southern steps?
Yes. They were taking place on the southern stairs for people coming up to be able to see them. I believe it was the southern stairs. Is that right, Billy? Tom? Y'all were there when we did the lecture on that?
Where they took the panels to?
Yeah, where they took the panels to. Jack, you were there. Do you remember? It was southern stairs, wasn't it? That's correct. They took them outside the actual temple courts. At least according to the source that we were using. Tonight would be the night to get one, wouldn't it?
Well, we're out of time for this evening, so we'll pick up here next session. We'll be doing some word studies. If you have a Jesenius Hebrew lexicon, you might want to bring that and use that as we'll be going into some in-depth studies of the words, and we'll just stop here.